You've selected a show from the Podcast Jukebox, a DIY podcast network.
Welcome to Disability After Dark, the podcast feed shining a bright light on all things disability, with your host, Andrew Gerza.
This episode of Disability After Dark has been brought to you by Come As You Are. Come As You Are is Canada's only worker-owned co-op sex shop. Trans-owned and operated, Come As You Are carefully reviews and curates their selection of sex toys, books, and DVDs. Now you can get 15% off your next purchase at comeasyouare.com using coupon code AFTERDARK. Hey there, Disability After Dark listeners, Andrew here. I want to tell you all about a really awesome deal that I got from my friends and new sponsors, Adam and Eve, the number one adult toy superstore. They reached out to me and they said, Andrew, we love Disability After Dark. We love your show. We love what you're doing. And we were wondering if you wanted to run some ads for us. And I was like, fuck yes, I do. But what are my awesome listeners going to get if I run ads for you? What are they going to get out of this? And they came back with a really fantastic deal that I want to share with you right now. I hope you're getting comfy, cozy, and crippled because this deal is pretty great. If you go to adameve.com, you can pick out almost any item in the store, almost any one item in the store for 50% off. That means you can get one dildo, one lube, and one thing of lingerie if you want for 50% off. And then, once you get that one item for half price, they throw in even more free stuff. Let me tell you all about it. Okay, so you got your one item at half price in your bag, and you're ready to go, but guess what? This offer also includes 10 free items on top of that other item. So you get one free item for penis havers, one free item for vulva havers, one free item for couples, and then you also get 6 free movies from the AdamEve.com website. You can get your favorite porn or an educational film. I love free movies. They're so awesome. This is such a great deal. And then on top of that, you also get free shipping. What could be better? This is such a great offer. So to redeem this great offer, what you're going to do is you're going to go to adameve.com. You're going to go to checkout and you're going to type in DARKPOD. That's DARKPOD at checkout. And you're going to get one item, almost anything in the store, at 50% off. And then you're going to get those 10 free gifts absolutely free as part of your offer. This is such a great deal, and this is just for you, Disability After Dark listeners, and I hope you run over to adameve.com and take advantage of it right now. Content warning. The language, content, and discussion found within this episode of Disability After Dark will be explicit. Listener discretion advised. Hello, hello, friends. Welcome to the show, friends. Thank you so much for clicking on this brand new episode of Disability After Dark, the podcast feed shining a bright light on all things disability with your host, me, Andrew Gerza. Hello. Thank you for coming and for listening to this and for being here as we do all these things. And so get comfy, cozy, and crippled, and let's get started. First things first, friends, I am so excited about all the new things that I'm going to do with this feed. I cannot wait to share with you some of the things that I'm doing. Well, I can share with you some of the things that I'm doing. So let me do that. I'm going to do a series with my sister Heather. We're working on We're working on a series within the podcast feed all about our venture to create the first line of sex toys for and by disabled people, and we're going to be premiering that soon on the feed at some point when we figure it out. It's going to be called Handycast, which you'll learn is the name of our company, is Handy, and so we're going to be doing a whole show all about that soon, coming in the feed. I'm also going to do a show about disability history in the feed, and I'm going to do a show about disability and food distribution, something that I think is really important, and I'm actually going to do it with a co-host friend of mine, Alexis Hilliard, who runs a really cool YouTube channel called Stump Kitchen, and we're going to do a show called Cripple Kitchen, but Cripple with a K, or Crip Kitchen with a K, where we talk about food and disability and all the things that come into that. So it's the feed is really expanding, and I'm super excited about that. Also, I'm going to do a movie show about disability cinema and media and disability media and stuff like that, and it's going to be called Lights, Camera, Cripple. So a whole bunch of stuff is coming in the feed that I'm so excited to share with you. On Thursdays, no matter what, you're going to get some type of episode on the show, whether it be one of the new show ideas I have or our regular sexy show. You're going to get that kind of show in the feed, but you're going to get more from me, and I'm really excited that you want to go along for that ride. One of the other things you may have noticed in the podcast today is that we have a new intro. I figured since we're expanding out past just sexuality, it would be cool to have a new intro. And my friend Dick Wound, who was in a band called, let me look it up, I can't remember. He was in a band in high school called, I'm looking. He was in a band called Music by Space Robot Scientists. So that intro you heard was by Music by Space Robot Scientists, and it's a whole new kind of intro for the show, just to move it out of just sexuality and into something a little bit more general. But thank you, Dick Wound and Music for Space Robot Scientists, or Music by Space Robot Scientists, for letting me use that track. Before we get to the shoutouts for this week from the Patreon peeps, I wanted to let you know also that because we are right in the midst of this pandemic, and who the fuck knows when that's going to end, I would love for more people to be a part of our quarantine and chill episodes. I'm getting emails from people who listen to the episodes telling me how important they are, how connected they feel to the people telling their stories, and how necessary this type of content is right now. So I want to bring you that crippled quarantine content. If you want to be on an episode of Quarantine and Chill, make sure you email me directly at disabilityafterdark@gmail.com. Put Quarantine and Chill in the subject line and let me know you want to be a guest. I would love to have you and hear how you're social distancing with disability, hear how you're dealing with the pandemic and disability and all the things around that. I'd love to have you be a part of that. And just before we get on to the show today, I want to do a shout out to some amazing people who have pledged to the Patreon. And this means if you pledge to the Patreon, you get the show one day early and a weird, awkward shout out from me. And so I'm going to pull up our latest Patreon supporter and try to make a weird pun out of their name. So let me do that right now. Looking to see who did it. Hang on one second. Pulling up the computer. This is a professional podcasting person right here, guys. This is how you do it, or friends. This is how you do it. I press record and here I'm going. So, yeah. This is what happens when you record things in your home studio and you haven't left your house since February because of quarantine. This is what happens. So our Patreon person today that we're going to give a shout out to is Cameron John Wallace, who pledged $5 a month to keep the show going. Cameron and John Wallace, you have three names because you're three times as awesome. Thank you so much for your support. If you want to support the show, you can go to patreon.com/disabilityafterdark and pledge as little as $1 a month or $5 a month to keep the show going. I really, really appreciate all your support. It means a lot, especially in these tough times for all of us. I couldn't appreciate it more. But now, let's get to today's show. A couple of episodes ago, I started a series on this show called What's Your Condition? Kind of where I went over the history, the mythology, some of the facts and diagnoses of having certain disabilities so we could all start learning more about the disabilities that affect people and try to dismantle our ableism that way. And I started with cerebral palsy, as you heard, and I got an email from somebody in Toronto recently who was like, I love these batch episodes. They're really good and really well researched. Can I come on the show and do one with you? And I was like, well, that's a cool idea. So on this episode today, you're going to sit and hear me interview a brand new friend of mine. She runs a Facebook page called Hope for Ataxia. She is somebody living with ataxia, and we kind of talk about the history of ataxia, how ataxia specifically affects her and her body, and kind of what ataxia looks like and how it presents. We also talk about how ataxia plays a role in her life in terms of dating and all that stuff. We also look at how ataxia plays a role in, I can't remember what I was going to say. We look at how ataxia affects her, we look at the history, and we look at how, what it was like for her to receive a diagnosis and how difficult that was. So we go into a lot of stuff in depth here. It was a really fun episode and was really important to sit down with her. And I want to do more What's Your Condition episodes where I do a deep dive into a condition. So if you want to email us at disabilityafterdark@gmail.com with a condition you want me to research on my own or with a guest host, I'd love to do that. But now, without further ado, here's episode 187, What's Your Condition? Ataxia, with my new friend, Courtney Ng, right here on Disability After Dark, the podcast feed shining a bright light on all things disability. Hey everybody, welcome back to a new episode of Disability After Dark. My name is Andrew Gerza. We're doing another cool episode of What's Your Condition today, which is a series that I started on the show a couple of weeks ago that I wanted to do a series all about different types of disabilities and kind of going over their history, going over some fast facts about them, learning about how they're diagnosed, learning about how they affect people with disabilities. And in doing that kind of journey and figuring out which disability I was going to do next after I did my disability of cerebral palsy, some people reached out to me and said, I love your show. I love this idea. This is a great opportunity for us to talk more and more about disabilities. And somebody that reached out to me is Courtney Ng, and I have Courtney Ng in the virtual studio today. Hi, Courtney.
Hi, Andrew.
I'm so excited to have you here. Thank you so much for reaching out to me and for wanting to do this. This is awesome.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I'm very excited.
So can you tell me a little bit more about, I haven't revealed the disability we're doing today. What disability are we doing on What's Your Condition today?
Yeah, so my specific condition is autosomal recessive cerebellar ataxia type 1. So the type of disability is ataxia. And so a little bit about me. So I'm the co-founder of Hope for Ataxia, which is a grassroots organization based in the Toronto area, and we aim to raise ataxia awareness globally.
Wow, and I totally forgot that you were based in Toronto, so we're so close to each other, and if we weren't going through a weird world pandemic right now, I would say we should do this in the studio, but I mean, it's really great that you do that, and so I wanted to kind of go over with you, mm-hmm. we're gonna break our discussion of ataxia into a couple parts today. We're going to do like we did last time on the first What's Your Condition part of the series, where we looked at like the history, the fast facts. So I'm going to do some fast facts on what I found out about ataxia, which surprisingly wasn't a lot.
Mm-hmm, exactly. It's so rare, and that's why, you know, I wanted to create hope for ataxia, because I found when I was explaining my disorder to friends and family, there's just, you know, there was just a disconnect and lack of knowledge. No one knew what it was.
Yeah. And I mean, it's so unfortunate that when you have disabilities that are so rare, there's so little information for you, and there's so few resources for you to access. So I definitely want to talk to you after we do the fast facts, and as we do the fast facts, kind of about like your experience with ataxia and how you know getting diagnosed was and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely.
Awesome. So the first fast fact that I found was that ataxia is not one disease or disorder, but rather a symptom of diverse conditions. How do you feel about that fast fact?
So it can be a symptom, but it's also hereditary. So like, for example, for me, it's recessive. So that means both my parents have the gene, they pass it on. There's also a dominant form. So ataxia is both acquired and is also hereditary. So it can be a symptom. So like if you have stroke or a head trauma or something has happened, you can have it where it comes as a symptom sporadically. It's something where it's a damage to the DNA, and it's passed through generation to generation. And in both cases, you know, they affect the cerebellum, which is that powerhouse in the brain that really coordinates balance and is responsible for performing those walking and other movements like that.
That's like, there's so much there, but like, it sounds very similar to when I was doing the first What's Your Condition, when I was looking at cerebral palsy. They also said, like, cerebral palsy is not, it's a set of movement disorders that affect, you know, the same kind of things, balance, muscles, swallowing, that kind of stuff. Very, very similar. Mm-hmm. So when I was just doing the quick fast facts before we hit record today, I was like, wow, they're very similar in presentation.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, like, with ataxia, there's a lot of misdiagnosis because it's so similar to other conditions. So, you know, like, there's a lot of similarities between ataxia and Parkinson's, but they are, you know, separate disorders in terms of, like, what's affecting in the brain. But, you know, similar sort of symptoms, like there can be tremors, things like that. So, and they're both neurological, so... there is some overlap in terms of the symptoms.
And I'm sure, given that there's so much overlap with different levels of disability, I'm sure it can be hard to get a diagnosis.
Yeah, definitely. You know, there can be misdiagnosis. Oftentimes people, you know, there's still different types of ataxia being discovered. You know, there's so many different types because, you know, you can have a dominant type, which is spinocerebellar ataxia. And there's like one to like, I'm not sure what number they're going up to. I know there's like SCA 14, there's SCA 37, there's different types because they all depend on the specific number, I guess, on the DNA, that gene. And then there's also types of recessive ataxias, like my type. And then there's, you know, there's like ARCA 8 and there's like different types of it. And some haven't even been discovered yet because there's so little research. So oftentimes people are misdiagnosed or they have an unknown type of ataxia.
And so this is me totally just asking a question. You may or may not know the answer. With the terminology of recessive and dominant, like that's taking me back to like grade 7 science stuff. But with like the terms recessive and dominant, like does recessive mean not as bad, or does it just mean do the genes?
It is the genes. So it's how it's carried on from generation to generation. So from my understanding is that with something that's dominant, for it'll be one gene that's passed down from one generation to another. Recessive genes can be carriers, and they don't have to show up at all. So they can, you know, be in a family for generations, and no one can actually show ataxia.
So it
because
doesn't,
it can just constantly pass on.
Yeah, so it doesn't affect the necessarily the severity of how the disability presents. It just affects whether or not you'll be a carrier.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, like in my case, both my parents have to be carriers in order to produce one child that ends up having ataxia and shows ataxia. So both my parents have the gene, but they don't have the symptoms.
So, oh, okay.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. Then. So they're recessive. So mine is recessive. So they're just carriers. So someone who has SEA, either a parent or like a grandparent, a cousin, or someone has that gene and is already exhibiting symptoms, and it passes on to the next generation.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So another fast fact that I found was that ataxia generally can affect coordination, balance, muscles, swallowing. Again, very similar to like cerebral palsy. How have those types of symptoms affected you?
Yeah. So for me, what I've noticed are three main things. So I have dysarthria, which is when you start to have speech sort of impediments and challenges. So my speech is like more slurred. And then, you know, that'll be something that I have to actively be aware of, you know, slowing down my speech, you know, being articulate. These are things that I have to be notice and take action on. And then fine motor skills. So like my writing has been affected. I don't, you know, practice writing. I find it really difficult. I don't have the full control of the pen or pencil. That, you know, also affects, I guess, in dating and stuff. And we can talk about that later. And also, like,
oh, I do want to go there because you went there. So I'm like, I want to go there now.
And balance, which is the last thing that I noticed. So things like, let's say, you know, I'm sitting at a desk, you know, I'm on the computer for a couple hours. I'll notice I'm stiff, and I'll notice that I have to like slow down to get up. I have to pause, or if it's really cold outside, my muscles, like everything just feels much more stiff. And I feel that I'm much more off balance. So it's kind of like a weakness almost that I feel.
Yeah. And so if you were to describe like your symptoms of ataxia, like if you were to like, if somebody didn't, cause I'm still trying to like figure out in my head how that, what that feels like. So if you were to kind of give a description of what that feels like for you, is it like a constant, like, does it feel like you're going to fall over all the time?
It can feel like that when I've either been walking for a long time, if it's really cold outside, I have to sit down. If I stand up, I'll feel really weak. I can walk unassisted, but I usually like to link arms with someone, whether it's a friend or a family member, while I'm walking, just to have that extra support. But yeah, so it's not, I don't feel if I'm sitting down, I don't feel like I'm falling or anything. It's more when I'm in motion. So, you know, if I'm going up the stairs, I'm going up one way, and I turn my head to look at a different direction, I will lose balance. Like, it's just because that part of my brain, the cerebellum, which is responsible for that coordination, that movement, is going to be affected when I do that. So it's like it can't handle that information,
I guess. Would you say in your experience, would you classify ataxia kind of as like, is it brain damage?
Yeah, it is neurological, and it is specifically damage to the cerebellum.
Okay, because the way it's described, like, they don't actually say brain damage in a lot of the stuff I was reading. So
right.
Yeah,
I mean, it's like atrophy, so like The way it was described to me is that my cerebellum is smaller than the average person's cerebellum. So, and that's how it's been since birth. And as I get older, it'll continue to get smaller and atrophy. And then that's where other symptoms come up.
So does that, so are you, do you feel, like we talked a little bit earlier before we hit record about like how it's going to progress over time. How do you feel about that as like, are you scared of that progression? Do you have like, what feelings of somebody living with this do you have?
Yeah, I think it's definitely, you know, it can be really confusing. It can be really scary knowing that you're living with a chronic disorder and there is no cure. I mean, you know, for ataxia, it's really managing the symptoms. So if you have like tremors or anything like that, then, you know, there might be like medications to take for the symptoms and, you know, like self-care to maintain an active lifestyle. But there's no like specific cure, you know, because it's not, yeah.
Yeah, because there's so little research and there's so little stuff being done about it. Does it frustrate you that there's no cure for this? Like, do you wish that we were doing more?
Yeah, definitely. I think that's why I created Hope for Ataxia, you know, because I think that there isn't enough information on this sort of this rare disease, and there's so many rare diseases out there, and this is just one type. And I think that, yeah, I want more information, more research into it, and I think there's some great organizations that do that, you know. But we're sort of just lending our voice to that movement.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's also really important to. I love that you've created something because we need more people living with stuff to create stuff around their disabilities because we don't have enough of that. We usually have large organizations trying to disseminate information that they don't necessarily understand, and having it from somebody who can give you lived experience, I think is really key.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. And I think, you know, right now it's just a team of two, it's just me and my friend. We both have ARCA 1, and, you know, it's just us sort of, you know, lending our voice to that and having lived experiences, you said.
And I'm also really interested to talk to you a little bit about how you're a person of color, and you...
Yeah.
You know, you have this disability. I'm curious to know, like, was it something in your family when you were talking about it? Like, was it something in your culture that they were ready to accept, or was it hard to kind of talk about that?
Yeah, it's a great question. So, you know, in general, I mean, in my culture, you know, mental health is not talked about. So, having something like a physical disability, and I'm in the gray, so I'm still independent, but I have some symptoms, but I'm still able to live life quite independently in that way.
Yeah.
So it's really hard to explain to family because they don't see what I'm talking about. It's different if you have, you know, a walking aid or
a wheelchair, or
yeah, something more visible, and it's like, this is, you know, what I'm going through. Definitely it's different to explain it to them, and they had no knowledge of it. It wasn't someone that ran in the family, because of a recessive type of ataxia. So as I said, it could go through generations and no one could have it.
So when you were kind of, when you like learned about it, what was your family's reaction? Like, how did they talk about it, or did they talk about it, or how did they come to terms with the fact that you had this disability?
Yeah. So I think I'm still working towards acceptance. I think it's a really lifelong journey, especially as some different symptoms come up. So, you know, when I was diagnosed, I was 25. So I didn't really take it seriously until I was about probably last year or so. And I think it's been really difficult for my mom. I'm very close with her. So she's my primary caregiver. And, you know, seeing me going through different tests and, you know, being passed through different doctors has been difficult. And, of course, you know, the frustration for me is just knowing that, you know, like, what can I do to sort of prevent the progression, you know?
Yeah. And so what are some of the things that you mentioned in wanting to prevent the progression? What are some of the things that you do to try to prevent the progression of the disease?
Yeah, so for me personally, it's just, you know, I make sure that I exercise. And that's great for anyone, able-bodied or not, to make sure that you just keep active. So I go for walks all the time, make sure my muscles don't atrophy. And then I'm also doing things with my diet. So I'm trying to eat, you know, as least processed foods as possible, and I'm trying to cut out meats, and I'm just sort of testing things out and seeing what works for me. So there's nothing proven out there, so I'm sort of just taking my health in my hands, right?
Yeah,
so.
which is both great and probably can also be really scary and frustrating too.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I don't know what is going to be the right method, you know. It's sort of a testing. It's trial and error, for sure.
What is one of the symptoms that you had that scared you when it first presented itself?
Definitely balance. So I started noticing symptoms when I was 19. So it would be something like I would just hit the side of, like, a side table or something as I was getting up. I thought I was just clumsy, and a lot of people pass that off as clumsiness. And then when I was about 23, 24, it just got a little worse. So I noticed that it would happen more often. So I'd need more time to get up and to sort of get my bearings before I started moving. And then that's when I went for testing and got diagnosed. And it was about a year. I got an MRI. I got a lot of blood work done because I didn't know what it was. They just knew that my cerebellum, there was something off. And it was, at the time, because of my age, it was moderate, which scared me. I was like, what? But yeah,
because moderate is not just a little bit. Moderate, it's like, oh, we're halfway to, like, maybe severe.
Exactly. So I was like, oh, my God. And so from there, I went for a genetics test, and, that's when I got diagnosed with the specific type, and, I've been seen by a neurologist every year, and he's gonna be, seeing me for probably the rest of my life.
And what was that like? 'Cause, you know, one of the other fast facts that I read was that it can often manifest as other disabilities and be really hard to get a diagnosis. What was that diagnosis kind of like journey, that first year of figuring it all out? What was that like for you?
Yeah, so I think it was actually very quick for me in comparison to other stories I've heard. Some stories I've heard is that, you know, it's taken years of being misdiagnosed. For me, it was, you know, the waiting was frustrating because, you know, again, Mariah, I get all these blood tests, but they wouldn't know what it was. So I'd have to wait to see a geneticist. I'd have to wait to get a referral to a different specialist. And so it was the waiting that was more frustrating for me, not knowing what it was. You know, I was sort of sitting in a limbo. And then once I did get diagnosed, you know, I was lucky that the results came back, you know, a specific type. And then we had a specific diagnosis, and so then my specialist was able to say, okay, this is sort of, we can't really do much, but this is what you have.
How did it feel when the doctor said, like, we can't really do a lot for you? Like, how did that feel for you?
So I was just like, okay, this is really rare, and it's definitely really isolating, for sure. And I think, you know, having an online community and, you know, having the Facebook group services is so helpful, because when you're diagnosed with a rare disease like ataxia, it's so confusing, and you often feel so alone, and you don't know, you know, where to turn to, who you can turn to. Especially for me, I didn't know any other, you know, Asian females who are young, who lived near me, who had it, and it was just a very lonely time. So definitely being able to connect with others through social media has been really helpful, and being able to find other communities. And that's what we try to do with our teleconferences, is have, you know, bring people together out of isolation.
That's fantastic. And I mean, especially right now with what's going on in the world, having not that I want to make this about COVID, we have other episodes about that, but because we're going through it right now, I think having teleconferences is really key and really important and super awesome, and I really commend you for doing that. And honestly, when I heard the word ataxia, when you first brought it up to me, I was like, I know kind of what that is, and so I'm learning so much from you today, just about how it manifests, and so thank you for that.
Thank you.
One of the other fast facts that I would just want to rattle off, I can only find U.S. stats, and it said that 150,000 people in the U.S. have ataxia. Do you have any insight in Canadian stats on what those numbers are?
Not off the top of my head. To be honest with you, I don't know off the top of my head.
Yeah. It's probably, again, probably because it's so rare.
I know that there is a really great organization. There's Ataxia Canada, which we're hosting a fundraiser for. And they're similar to the National Ataxia Foundation in the U.S., but they're based in Montreal. So they do work within Canada. So because the type of ataxia I have actually originated out of Beauce, Quebec, which is a city in Quebec. So it's got roots there. So, yeah. Sorry?
That's great. I'm on their website right now, just looking at their website as you're talking. Yeah. Like, oh, yeah, they're great. They're great.
Yeah. No, they're really great. And, yeah, so, you know, we're hoping, you know, the in-person portion of our fundraiser is being pushed back, but essentially we're partnering with Ataxia Canada to raise funds for them.
That's fantastic, and I think everybody, and I will make sure that when we air this episode that there will be a lot of links to all this stuff, because it's so, so important.
Excellent.
I'm looking at just some of the symptoms on their website, actually. Thank you for bringing it to my attention, because I didn't know that it was. I'm looking at like things like cardiac problems, things like tremors. Are you worried about any of that stuff as things progress for you as you get older?
It's a possibility. I really don't know the you know, what will happen in terms of the symptoms, because for me in the specific type, because from what I know is that the research studies for my type are still ongoing. So the participants are still alive.
Yeah.
So I don't know, but you know, they're still being studied and everything. So that it's a possibility. I don't know. Yeah.
I want to go into a little bit of the history with you of what I found about ataxia, because I found a little bit of, and I couldn't find a lot about ataxia itself because it's so rare, but I did find about the German pathologist Nikolaus Friedrich, who was born on July 1st, 1825 in Würzburg. I'm guessing in it just says Würzburg, so I'm assuming that's in Germany somewhere. And he was a German pathologist and neurologist who was a third generation physician in his family. His father was psychiatrist Johann Baptist Frederick, and his grandfather was pathologist Nicholas Anton Friedrich. I think it's Friedrich. They discovered a description of idiopathic facial paralysis, and they also discovered a whole bunch of other symptoms like Friedrich's disease. Nicholas Friedrich started discovered Friedreich's ataxia, which is another form of ataxia. And he characterized it by an unusual gait pattern. So just how people walk and balance issues. And just because I couldn't find a lot on the history of ataxia itself, I'm going to kind of give you, and because we are a sexy podcast, I'm going to give you a little description of Nicholas Friedreich. He looked really hot for the early 19th century. He was, you know, if I was in the 19th century and I wanted to go see a doctor, I'd want him to treat me. He was basically, he looked like the McDreamy of his day. I think in the picture that I can see here, and I'll post it on the social media. He was involved in also the correlations of muscular dystrophy, brain tumors, all that kind of stuff. And I know I know the history section of this is a little bit thin, but it's because there's so few articles on what ataxia is, which basically to me means we need more research in this area.
Yeah, definitely.
There's just not enough, and I was hoping that when I typed in ataxia into my Google machine, there would be like way more stuff, and there just wasn't. So
yeah, exactly.
That's just proof we need to do more. But I want to quickly jump into, we did a little bit about diagnosis, we did a little bit about that. I want to talk to you about how ataxia for you has been socially understood by your peers. Like when you're out in the world, how do you feel about disclosing? What are some like weird, funny things that have happened? Like weird, funny or funny things that have happened to you? Would you say you're a person with ataxia or you're ataxic?
I would say I'm a person with ataxia. I mean, for me, I think it's definitely part of who I am. I don't know how to describe this, but it's part of who I am, and it's part of my identity.
Right.
But I wouldn't call myself an ataxic person, I guess. That I guess sense. It's sort of the language and the semantics around how you
identify it, which is completely fine and great. I think that's because for me, I would say I'm a disabled person, but I also wouldn't say I'm a cerebral palsy person. Like I wouldn't say that either. So like I totally understand why you would want to not distance yourself, but like change the language for yourself. It makes sense. Tell me some of the weird, interesting things that have happened to you being on the world with ataxia.
Yeah, so for me, because I am grateful that I don't have a very aggressive form. So it's, you know, but I've heard stories where, you know, there's the misconception that we're drunk. Because across the board, we all have balance and coordination and sort of gait abnormalities.
Yeah.
So really wide stance. So when taxi is really aggressive, you know, someone can appear like, you know, they're walking like a drunk. And, you know, I've heard stories where, you know, people have reported them to the police, like there's a drunk on the street or something, which is really disheartening. You know?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of horrible because, like, and, you know, also because, and as you've stated, like dysarthria is a thing that happens. So if you have gait problems and dysarthria at the same time, somebody stopping you would definitely assume you were drunk, and would maybe, because a lot of police services don't have a lot of training with disability, they won't, you know, take your word for it. They'll just assume you were drunk and, you know, do things around that are problematic. So I assume that it's frustrating to just kind of be out in the world.
Exactly, yeah. Especially because people don't understand. It's not, there isn't so much research, and, you know, something like MS or Parkinson's, like it's much more well known, I guess, and there's much more funding towards those diseases, and which is great. You know, for rare diseases, it's hard because, you know, trying to explain what it is, it's really difficult. It's a challenge in itself.
Yeah. And how, so if you were to just explain it to, like, a lay person on the street who may have been like, oh my god, that girl's drunk, how would you, like, stop them and be like, actually, you're super wrong. Here's what, like, how would you quickly tell them that you have this?
Yeah, I would, you know, say, actually, you know, I have a neurological disorder. It's called ataxia. Would you like to hear more? You know, and, you know, I think it's about educating. And a lot of time people don't know. And once they do know, then, you know, that just creates more awareness.
What is your stance on, you said educating, and I was like, oh, that's, I want to, let's go there. What is, like, a lot of disabled people that I talk to, they don't mind educating, but they get really burnt out having to constantly re-educate different people about the condition. How do you feel about that?
Yeah, I think personally, that's part of what we're doing with Hope for Ataxia. So, you know, just spreading the awareness and is part of, you know, I can see the burnout. I think I'd be okay with it, just because I think it needs to happen, especially for something that where there isn't as much knowledge of it.
Right. I want to move on to, because we kind of made a joke earlier on about how we talk later about dating and sexuality and ataxia a little bit. So can we? Are you okay if we go there?
Sure. Yeah.
Awesome. So tell me how ataxia has affected your dating or sex life or both.
Yeah, so definitely for me, it's something I have to disclose, and it's scary. There's always that fear of, you know, rejection for anyone. Dating is hard for anyone, but for sure, you know, knowing that, you know, it's a chronic illness and it is progressive, it's scary for any potential partner, and to tell them that, because, you know, right now the symptoms might not look so bad, but they're gonna get worse. I don't know what it's gonna look like. I don't have a clear map, so yeah. So it's been, you know, I'm just going through it. So yeah.
And so how do you, like, if you were to how would you disclose to a partner? Is it very similar to what you would have said to somebody on the street, like, hey, I have this neurological disorder and want to hear more? Or is it like, yo, this could happen during like sexy times and you might need to know this?
Yeah, I think I would probably take a different stance. Just like, I'm, you know, I'd probably explain it how it was explained to me, you know, about the cerebellum being smaller than the average person's. And I'm also cognizant of not overwhelming anyone. I don't want to be like, you know, and this is why I do this, this is why I do this, and, you know, it affects all the areas of my life, you know.
What is one thing about ataxia that you wish people understood more?
I wish that people would understand that, or know more that it's that's a really good question. I would say that you know, to divide those myths, the main myth is that we're drunk or that, you know, we're mentally challenged because of the symptoms, right? If you have dysarthria, it's like, no, you know, it's more of it can manifest into you know, cognitive and mental at, you know, later stages or as it progresses. But you know, primarily it's a physical challenge. So
you'd want people to understand that just because you have ataxia doesn't mean you also have an intellectual disability.
Yeah.
That's fair. Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, that must be so hard because obviously we want to support people with intellectual disabilities. And if you have ataxia and intellectual disabilities, I'm sure it's frustrating. And it's really tough to have to, like, constantly say, like, I don't have an intellectual disability, but, like, this is what I'm living with.
Yeah, definitely.
Do you, like, what do you think it would take to get, because we've talked so much about how there's so limited, research into this disability, into these sets of disabilities right now. What do you think it would take to get more research into this area?
I think, you know, something like that, you know, I'm doing is, you know, just spreading awareness and just, you know, getting your friends involved, getting family and friends who aren't in the community to know, giving them knowledge to what it is. And then they can spread that knowledge and it keeps going. It's like a snowball. Yeah. And I think as there's more awareness, you get more people interested in research and then, you know, possible clinical trials and, you know, and it sort of snowballs from there.
Do you think, I was just listening to you talk, coming up with like five more questions. Do you think that your experience with ataxia and this disability, has it given you something? Have you like gained a different perspective living with this disability?
Yeah, definitely. Oh, for sure. I think, you know, creating Hope for Ataxia has been the project I'm most proud of, to be honest. And I think in my whole life, I've, you know, always been looking for something meaningful, but I couldn't find it. But I think, you know, the silver lining is that my purpose found me. No, I'm having this means that, you know, I'm blending my voice to something that I think will have an impact.
That's really powerful. I love what you just said about how, like, your purpose found you, because I feel the same way with my disability. Like, I didn't think that I was going to do this kind of work and do what I do, and that, like, it has brought me so much community in doing what I do and doing this, and, like, to know that, like, you, before we started talking, you listened to the show and it was important to you, like, just to know that it's bringing people together that I had no idea would follow what I do. So I'm very similarly to you, I'm very proud of that my disability, even though it sucks sometimes, and there are moments where I'm like, fuck, I hate this, but like, it's brought people together. Speaking of like the moments where you're like, fuck, I hate this, what are some moments where you're like, I just wish this wasn't part of my disability today?
Yeah, like drinking. You know, I wish I could, you know, be drinking and, you know, doing all those things, but I get tired.
Yeah.
And drinking actually, I mean, drinking in general will loosen you up, right? So it's even more pronounced for someone with ataxia. So I avoid drinking at all costs. So that's something I, you know, if I didn't have this, that I would do more of is, you know, do something, you know, a 20-something-year-old would go out and do.
Yeah. Does it make you feel like you can only be in certain social situations because people will say, like, hey, can I grab you a drink? And you have to be like, no, actually, I can't because...
Yeah, no, I hear you. I don't go to, like, parties and stuff and, you know, because I do get tired and people exhaust me. I'll just feel like
I love how you kind of were like, people exhaust me both because of your disability, but also you were like, people just exhaust me generally. So
yeah. So I'm like, I just kind of want to go. But yeah, so if I avoid certain situations, I think I naturally do, because I think I lean towards the introverted spectrum anyways. So a lot of people take a lot of my energy, and I try to avoid those just because I don't have the stamina to, like, stay up till like 12 or 1. I get tired.
So this was an amazing interview, and thank you so much for taking the time today. It was so great. Before I let you go, I know you wanted to kind of talk a little bit more about your organization, Hope for Ataxia, and kind of the fundraiser that's coming up in June. You talked about it a little bit earlier about how it was like going to be in person, but obviously, given that the world is falling apart, we had to change all that.
Yeah, exactly.
But tell me a little bit more about the organization and like how people can get involved and what it is that you do.
Yeah, of course. So Hope for Ataxia is a grassroots organization. So I curate content for it. So I try to find content for every type of ataxia that I can find. And we just have a Facebook group, and I will curate the content and post it on the Facebook group. We have a really budding community there as well. So on Facebook, it's just Hope for Ataxia. We also have a community as well. So it's another group that where we can really share experiences. And we also have a website. So it's hopeforataxia.org. And as you mentioned, yeah, our fundraiser. So it would be in person. It was supposed to be in Mississauga on June 6th, but you can still donate online. And so we are partnering with Ataxia Canada. So all the funds will go to them, and that'll go towards, you know, their different initiatives, whether it's research, awareness, things like that. They're a really large organization, and so we're really excited to work with them. And they've been great.
That's fantastic. Thanks for letting us know about all that. I'll make sure that when this episode airs, it'll definitely be before June 6th, because we have all the time in the world now. So what is anyone else going to want to do except listen to podcasts? I'll make sure that it's all in the show notes so people can contact you. How can they get a hold of you directly, Courtney?
Yeah, so you can message the Hope for Taxi group. I'm actually on Facebook. I'm under the name Courtney May. So Courtney and then M-A-Y. And the reason I use that is it's my middle name. So you can message me directly. Thank you.
It's a very nice middle name.
So you can message me directly if you want to know more information as well. And then, you know, we also have Faces of Ataxia on our website as well, which are profiles of people with ataxia as well as caregivers, and we're constantly looking to update that as well. So definitely if you want to learn more, you can check that out. And we have also have different things like our teleconferences, which we invite everyone to join, and we hold that every 14 weeks, and it's a really great way for people to connect with others in the community and people who are interested in learning about ataxia. And we have guest speakers from the disability community.
Well, if you need a guest speaker, I'm around. Let me know.
yeah, that'd be great.
I had one question that popped in my head just before you go, and we've already done the end stuff, but just before you go, I'm going to ask it anyway. You mentioned earlier that your mom is your primary caregiver.
Yeah.
How has ataxia kind of affected your relationship? And you said you were really close already. Like, has it made it stronger? Has it strengthened the bond? Has it strained things? Like, what is it like having her as your primary caregiver, and how has it affected your relationship?
Yeah, so it's definitely strengthened. So things that she helps me with is, you know, we go for walks and she'll support me. She helps me keep me on track with my diet, exercise, you know. And, you know, it's been tough on her, I think, emotionally as well, because she sort of had to ride the waves with me as we're both going through sort of the diagnosis and everything. But she's been great.
That's awesome. And I think, you know, caregivers that are dealing with new diagnoses of their, especially parents, really need to be given the support. And I commend her because, you know, my mom was for a long time my primary caregiver. And when we do stuff together, she is my primary caregiver. So I know the toughness it is of trying to navigate an adult kid going through, like, disabilities and trying to help somebody when they're, you're trying to let them be independent, but you're seeing that they can't necessarily be independent as you want them to be. It's a big mindfuck. So I appreciate that she's there for you.
Yeah, no, it's great. I mean, she's my biggest support, you know, creating Hope for Ataxia and, you know, going through the nonprofit registration and creating this organization. She's been a great support. So I'm happy to have her.
That's awesome. Thank you so much, Courtney's mom. And that's all. So I don't have any more questions. It was going to be a straight up what's your condition, but it just kind of turned into like a fun interview, which I love anyway. That's fine. It was great. I love having you on the show. Is there any last things you want to share?
Well, I just want to say thank you so much for having me. It's been a pleasure just talking with you, and you've made this really, really easy for me, and I felt very comfortable.
Good. So, I'm so happy, because you mentioned earlier when we started recording that you were nervous, and I was like, I don't be nervous. It's literally just gonna be just us having a chat. So thank you so much for coming on today, Courtney. It was so fun to talk with you. Thanks for making Disability After Dark what it is. It's guests like you that really like make the show go. So I appreciate that.
Oh, thank you so much.
All right, Courtney, we'll talk after I hit off, but thank you so much.
Okay, all right.
Bye.
Bye.
All right, friends, this has been another edition of Disability After Dark, the podcast feed shining a bright light on all things disability. I'm, of course, your number one career cripple and your disabled Dick Smith host, Andrew Gerza. If you like what you heard today and you want to follow my work and find out more about what I do, you can head over to www.andrewgerza.com, or you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at @itsandrewgerza. If you want to follow the podcast directly, you can head over to Twitter and punch in disaftdarkpod and follow us there. If you want to contact the show with a show idea, a guest idea, a comment, or a complaint, you can head over to your email and email us at disabilityafterdark@gmail.com. Thanks so much for listening to this latest edition of Disability After Dark, and we'll be here to shine a bright light on more things really soon. Thanks, everybody. Copyright notice. Disability After Dark was presented, created, and produced by Andrew Gerza and Crippled Content Creations. Music was by Music by Space Robot Scientists. Any and all materials, including graphics, audio recordings, and music recordings, are property of the owner and cannot be used or distributed without express permission. Copyright Notice 2020.